This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 26, One Fish Brings Two. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we have a host of fishing tips from Berners. But we also have some cricket as well. We talk about Andy Flower doing some club cricket coaching. We find out if fitness counts in the 10,000 hour rule, and we learn how to play the inside out shot over covers. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to coaching and playing better cricket, all wrapped up into 30 minutes of audio goodness. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things around here at Pitch Vision Towers, and helping me are some very, very fine coaches and, of course, somebody else. So let's start with the coaches. First of all, someone who is never far away from a cricket ground. He's Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Hello, boys. You all right?
Very good, thank you. And where are you today? Because you've got a bit of a breeze going on and some applause and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not so happy about the applause because we're bowling. But I'm at Tunbridge School today. We have a lovely Tunbridge School.
Yeah.
At their end of year festival, playing against Glenwood School from South Africa at the moment. And then yesterday we played against Rondebosch School from South Africa. And tomorrow we're going to play against Tunbridge if the gods of weather allow us.
Yes, keep praying for that yellow orb in the sky to remain there for a little bit longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also joining me on the line, Sam Lavery. He's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there, how are you?
Good, good, good. And where are you today?
I am at Burnaby Road, the old one of the old outgrounds for Hampshire, home of the Royal Navy cricket club. So I'm here watching a couple of my boys from the grammar school play against the Royal Navy in a local select 11 invitational side. So nice afternoon, really. It's only 100 metres from our school, so it's nice to have a local game for a day.
Convenient. And what kind of a format is that? All day, or are we...
It's actually a straight 50, this one.
Oh, lovely.
And one of my boys has just come into the attack, so it'll be interesting viewing. But my focus will be solely on the conversation.
Yes, well, you know, if anything exciting happens in the game, then we'll be interested in finding out a bit more about that. And of course, somebody who is always missed when he never appears on the podcast, but he's here this week. It's Berners. Hello, Berners.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, afternoon or evening. Delete as appropriate.
Berners has been away for ages, and the first thing that he does is absolutely stuff up his intro. Great effort, Berners. Love it. Welcome back, mate.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
Nicked off first nut.
I'm not in any given time zone. I'm in space.
Are you in the runs though, Berners? That's what I want to know.
I haven't played cricket. Been fishing, mate.
Fishing.
Been fishing down in Portugal.
Fishing.
Jesus Christ. Fishing in Portugal.
What's
the summer?
Is this the place to announce your official retirement, or is that what you're saying?
Mid-season break, it all got a bit too much for me after three games, a few washouts. It all dawned on me the perils of the English cricket season were reappearing, so I did a runner.
Yeah, covers on, lads.
But back this week, massive top-of-the-table clash in the Middlesex Second Division Premier League. Richmond against Ealing, first place third. It's all on. It's us or them for the title.
Really? So it's a... It's a six-pointer, as they say in football.
Yeah, it's the halfway point of the season, and I've played three games.
Speaking of club cricket, of course, we've got some interesting news this week coming out that Andy Flower, not content with being one of the masterminds of ECB strategy, he's decided he's going to spend his spare time doing a bit of cricket coaching as well. And he's taken the range doing some coaching at a local cricket club near his house. So he's making us all look bad here, isn't he?
Oh, I don't know about that. He's doing what he loves, isn't he? I don't think he's making us look bad. He's doing exactly what we do.
And yeah,
It's great that Andy wants to be involved at every level. And Bob Warmer said to me a number of years ago that the real test of any coach is whether they can coach everywhere from, you know, a primary school playground all the way up to test cricket. And I think Andy's one of those coaches that is more than happy to get his hands dirty, to get in amongst it and offer some value wherever that may be. And the great thing about somebody like Andy Flower, it's not for money, it's for the love. And he's never lost that love and that drive for cricket. And he wants to give that back to the cricket club that's just up the road. And it's fantastic for Stratford to have Andy there. Probably better for them to have Andy there than Chard and Bentler had for having me around. You know, it's just great to see him still being involved. And the lovely thing is that he's also involved a lot with a number of the up-and-coming players with England. And I know he's done some fantastic work with Johnny Bairstow in recent weeks, which is really helping him to stay connected with the top of the game whilst he's doing his stuff for Yorkshire as well. And I mean, he's just somebody that you want involved in the game. Somebody who is world number one and one of the best coaches ever to coach the game is working within our game at different levels now is fantastic.
It really is, and what an opportunity for the players in that club to learn a few things and to spend some time with someone who thinks so deeply and so passionately about cricket.
It'd be interesting to see how the younger guys go who sort of just almost take it for granted. They probably just start playing and Andy Flower's their coach. And see what happens when he's not their coach, because it's a fantastic opportunity, isn't it, to have someone like that. And it sounds like he's there a couple of nights a week, and he sounds from what I've read about it, and what I've heard, he sounds like he's pretty committed, and it's his local club. So why not?
I think the nice thing for me is that all of the stuff that I've seen on it, whether it be on television, on some of the film that was taken at the ground, or in some of the articles, is that he's actually smiling and enjoying himself. And I think whilst we talk about the benefit for the cricket club and the players that are there, I think it's also going to help Andy, because he's suffered a pretty tough winter where there weren't too many smiles, and he probably didn't always enjoy the challenge of coaching in that tough environment. And certainly for myself, coming out of the England setup, it gave me a new sort of breath of fresh air really into my coaching to be working alongside some club players that would hang on to every word. And I'm sure that's the case for Andy as well. But it's lovely to see him smiling and having some fun. And I'm sure when he comes back into another high quality job, which he will do inevitably at some point, he'll take his experiences from Stratford and that vigour that it brings him and put that into his next environment as well.
It is lovely sometimes, isn't it? Just to not I wouldn't say to have time away from your own players that you see all the time, but just to have a new group of faces in front of you sometimes, and a new challenge and a new direction for what you're going to do. And obviously, it's a different scenario and a different level of cricket. But just sometimes turning up at a different venue with a different group and other different coaches around you and different players around you is just something that's a really nice thing to do once in a while to keep you fresh as a coach.
No, I agree, mate. And it's all about, we talked about it last week on the podcast, you know, with one of the fellas about getting back to that childlike state. And particularly when you're falling down the levels, or you're not involved at the level that you once before, which Andy temporarily is in that position, to be able to work at a club level will often rekindle that fire and that buzz and that enjoyment and the banter that probably got us into the game initially when we were kids or when we were first starting off as coaches. So I was really excited to see him smiling and enjoying his coaching again, because it's something that we hadn't seen over the previous 6 to 8 months.
It definitely sounds like the banter's there as well, because from the article one of the articles that was put out, it says the first thing he did is cracked out the side arm, bowled the first ball and put down a beamer at the guy at the other end. So I think they've been giving him some stick for that. So it's a nice way to settle the nerves, I think, for the other guys, because both groups are going to be a little bit nervous. Yeah, that was Shane Warne. Broke his other hand.
So what's the difference then when you move from a level which is you're dealing with, say, professionals, internationals, that kind of a level, and you move to working with club players? What's the difference in approach? Is there much of a difference? I mean, obviously you get less time, but is there much of a difference in approach, Gareth?
I think your language changes, and we talk about that quite a lot, don't we? You have to be a little bit respectful of the fact that these guys that you're working with at club level have had a tough day at work or at college or whatever the case may be, rather than being immersed in cricket 24/7. But knowing Andy and certainly the way that I went about my coaching post being in the England setup at club level, you don't go any lower on your standards. And I made it very clear, and I'm sure Andy makes it very clear, that he's got standards and he's never going to lower those. But you have to lower possibly your expectations of others to be able to concentrate fully or be able to do those skills over a sustained period of time, purely because they're not some of the best players in the world. So you change that, but obviously your aspirations are to keep developing people, and that's what Andy's very good at, and I'm sure he won't change that at any stage in his coaching career, irrespective of the environment in which he coaches.
That's pretty key, isn't it? You've obviously got a level of experience and a number of skills that you can use, but ultimately you're working towards a target that is set by the group of players around you. And you're trying to take them to that target. It's a different target to the one you probably used to aim for, but you've got to use what you have and what you know to get to their target, which might not be to be world number one now. It might be to be not to be relegated in the local Division 2 or whatever it might be. I'm not sure, but the skills you're going to use aren't going to diminish by any stretch, are they?
Okay, let's move on to the yes-no round. Three questions where we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And Berners is back. So, Berners, you've got the questions there. When you're ready, let's fire away.
First question. Teach the first step. A quick single is the final element every time you coach a shot.
No.
No.
Yes.
Second question. Nets are a terrible place to learn how to play under pressure.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Third and final question. One brings two. Bang, bang.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
Well, it just has here.
N equals not, one is not a good sample size.
Correct.
Time now for the mailbag. And the mailbag works in a very straightforward manner. A question or two is sent in by the readers to Pitch Vision Academy or the listeners to this show. And we answer those questions and then choose the best question of the week to win a prize, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send in your question if you feel the desire to do so by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. But we've already got this week's questions lined up. And Berners, you've got one from an old friend there.
Old Binger Bonger's back in town, and his question relates to fitness, and I think he's wanting to know if he can, he's needing to work his training hours out here, and he's saying, does this fitness element of practice fall into the stereotypical cliche of the 10,000 hour training rule?
Yes, a rule that has come under some scrutiny in recent times, so... How do we feel about fitness within that context, and how do we feel about that context itself?
Well, if I answer the first bit, the context of the 10,000-hour rule is one that the originator of that rule, or the said originator, doesn't actually ever state that he initially said. It's something that's been built around his research, and he's been labelled as the 10,000-hour guy. His name is Ericsson, and he actually now goes around conventions and puts his hand up when people talk about the 10,000 hour rule, and he says, well, who came up with this? And they'd all say Ericsson, and he puts his hand up and says, well, on behalf of Ericsson, who I am, I can categorically say that I never came up with that. So he did a great bit of research on a number of different disciplines, one of which being music predominantly, and had a look at how people develop to become Philharmonic Orchestra participants and went through the various stages of doing their grades and what have you, and worked out that the mean average for those people, and there were thousands within the study, was 10,000 hours. But over the course of all of that group, there were a significant number that had taken less than 10,000 hours, somewhere around 3,000 to 5,000 hours, and there were a few that had taken up to about 27. And of course, that completely sways the research. So the 10,000 hour rule is one that isn't one that should be really overstated, because it's largely down to the individual, and I think we talk about that enough on this show. The last thing that I would say is, yes, fitness very much plays a part of any program, whether it be 10,000, 3,000 or 26,000. And the reason being is that we do know that skill acquisition increases significantly if there's a physical competency that underlies it. So the fitter you are and the more competent you are, the quicker you will pick up skills. And you'll find that the people who are fittest within cricket will pick up their skills more rapidly, just as the same in any other sporting situation. And therefore, the 10,000 hour rule will go down to 3,500 or 5,000 for that individual. It's massively part of it. And 10,000 hours is largely irrelevant, but fitness is very relevant within any program.
Yeah, I think the main feeling I get about the 10,000 hour rule is it isn't a rule, as Gareth said. It's more of a an illustration of the commitment that's needed. The way I use it, because a lot of people are aware of it these days, and the way when people do say it, I would suggest it's just trying to show you the commitment that's needed. And it's something that you're not going to do, learn things overnight. You're not going to become an international cricketer in the course of weeks and months. It's 10,000 isn't a number that suddenly, as soon as you click over the last hour, you become something. But the one thing it does show is it illustrates that it's a long road and there's a lot of commitment that's needed over a long period of time. And as Gareth said there, the fitness is a vital part of that in any sport, I think, pretty much. It's just a show of commitment, really, that you do need to stick a lot of time to your sport, whatever it might be.
The basics that I come up with when I talk to anybody about what they're doing is that if you have an ambition or an expectation of where you're going, then it's really important that the behaviours and the training programmes and the commitment levels that Sam talks about match that expectation. Otherwise, you're ultimately going to be disappointed. So if your aspirations are to play Test cricket, yet your attitude to practice or to fitness is really poor, then obviously you are reducing your chances of playing Test cricket. Whereas somebody who has got the same level of talent or ability or whatever, who puts themselves through the ringer and commits themselves to their fitness, practices in a deliberate fashion, gives themselves a much better chance. So as long as there's a balance, and if you're a club player, and as long as you balance up and get your behaviours right to meet those levels, then I don't think anybody can grumble. But I get really annoyed when people expect to get incredible results without putting that commitment that Sam talks about.
And it's important to say, I think, that fitness is a part of developing yourself as a cricketer in a lot of different ways, but it's also not a replacement for learning the skills of cricket. You can't do 10,000 hours of fitness and never pick up a cricket bat.
Absolutely. There's almost... I mean, I imagine someone could come up with this, or maybe someone has done, but there's always going to be a ratio of fitness work to skill work. And that's going to be different in every single sport. There's always going to be a ratio or a flexible ratio anyway, to give people an idea of how big a part fitness plays in their sport. And obviously within cricket, it plays a reasonably significant part.
So, Bonga, hopefully that helps. I think what we've said is yes there, isn't it? But always keep within the context, the wider context. Bear that in mind.
Next one comes in from Akash, and he's asking if we can give him some advice on the basics of playing the all-time classic T20 shot, which goes over cover and is often known as an inside-out cover shot. So sometimes when you're playing against a spin or playing against the natural swing of the ball and hit the ball in the air over cover.
Well, obviously, the first thing I'd like to talk about is what their options are and why they're wanting to introduce a new option. Not that it's a bad thing; it's obviously a good thing to expand the options you had. But I'd be interesting to see the hole in their technique that they're looking to plug, or the area of their technique they're looking to develop, and how they want to use it. As you said, with 2020 cricket these days, an in-out shot over cover could be something we're looking to employ against a left-arm spinner. It could be someone looking to attack against an off-spinner who's got the offside in. It could even be one of those shots we're looking to play against the opening bowler now. So, first of all, looking to just find out how they want to employ it in their game. I often get guys from school come to me and they want to play a shot, and the reasoning behind it is very much because I've seen it on TV. And it's not actually something that they need to add into their game, but it's probably not the best way for them to spend their practice right now, because at 12 and 13 years old, a dill scoop against a 35 mile an hour spinner isn't always the most effective shot. By the way, N equals 2 now, bang bang.
We're building up the evidence.
Yeah, we're building it slowly but surely. We're building up the evidence. Two wickets in two overs, so there you go. First of all, though, it would be a bit of conversation of just where it's going to fit into their game and why they feel they need it, and if we feel it's the best use of their time, or if there are other areas that we could be investigating first, is probably the first conversation I would have, and see where things move from there.
Well, I agree with everything that Sam said. I think why and the how. Well, the how follows the why, so I'll talk about the how now, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Depending on who you're facing, and also depending on how your body moves, will have a huge impact on how you try and get this ball up over extra cover. So if I use the three examples that you talked about, Dave, if we start with the seam bowler who's swinging it, a lot of time when you see the best players in the world execute this, is they're effectively hitting a cover drive, but they're just taking the ball up a little bit earlier on its ball path and using the swing to their advantage. So using that swing to create the width of them to allow their hands to go up and through the ball. And we see a number of players, particularly in 2020 cricket, at the beginning of innings, when the ball is swinging and it's a bit newer, and also when you've got those guys hugging the edge of a circle on the offside, effectively use the swing to get the ball up and up over the top. But you don't really need to change anything in terms of your shot making. You just play a cover drive, but you take the ball slightly earlier and use the swing to your advantage to get it up over the guys at extra cover and cover. So that's the first one. The second one, which was the left arm spinner, and depending on the amount that the ball is breaking off the pitch, I would often use or encourage people to use this on flatter wickets and use it as a really good option, because the curve of the ball generally comes back into the middle of a bat on wickets that aren't spinning. So the ball curves through the air and carries off on the pitch in a pretty straight line. And you can get inside that ball either by starting your batting position more towards leg stump, secondly, to utilise coming down the wicket and to move yourself outside the line of a ball, then to come back into the line of a ball with your feet, which will create the angle to hit the ball up over the top of extra cover. Now, the best players in the world at this one approach the ball from a different angle and then they hit up through the ball, as opposed to using their wrists to get the ball over the top. And when you see people in club practice sessions having a go at this, it becomes predominantly a wrist shot rather than using the whole body system to get the ball up over extra cover. So the best players in the world, somebody like AB de Villiers, is very good at this. They come inside the ball, then come back into it. So everything is going in a straight line over up over the top of extra cover, rather than just using their wrists to get the ball up over extra cover. So that would be that one. And the other one that we want to talk about is the off-spinner, because I used to like hitting the ball through extra cover and over extra cover against off-spinner. And this goes back to the age-old discussion of hitting with the spin or hitting against the spin or hitting into the spin. And I used to find that the ball coming back into the bat would give me much better chance of the bat blade, the blade of the bat and the wood of the bat to be aligned with the ball for longer, which means that the ball contact is going to be cleaner. So I used to love squeezing the ball past extra cover on his inside, on his right-hand side, or using the spin coming back into me to be able to meet the middle of the bat and go up over the top of extra cover. And I think that's a fantastic shot. And again, it's all about the angle that you approach that ball from. So you want to be coming back into the ball. So if I was looking to access that shot, I'd probably go from leg stump or middle and leg to come back into the line of the ball pitching just outside off stump to take it up over the top. The last thing that I want to be doing is to be creating the shot by using my wrists. And that's what I see a lot of young players and club players trying to do. If you're getting into that position, you've either got to have fantastic wrists or you're going to find that your contacts are going to be pretty poor. So to me, it's about alignment that you're coming back into the ball to be able to hit straight through it up and over the top of extra cover.
So how close are you playing the shot to your body? You're not reaching for it.
No, absolutely. You're right. Yeah. You know, the idea is that you end up in a fairly conventional driving position. In order to access a shot, because you need to be close enough to be able to apply your body weight going through it, because you don't just want it to be hands and bat that are going through it. You want the whole of your body system to be engaged with it in the shot. So it's about coming from the leg side back into the ball and almost playing a conventional cover drive, but approaching it from a different angle. So all your momentum's going towards extra cover rather than going towards, you know, the sight screen or towards mid-off as we would do conventionally.
How are you at the inside out shot, Berners?
Always try and get down the wicket to it, go down the wrong line and normally get stumped.
Yeah. Yes.
But then again, I'm a left hander and the ball's normally always going away from me, so it's ideally placed for that shot. But yeah, if it's turning and if they're varying the pace, then it's not always a good idea. So I've eradicated that from my array of shots. I've taken on board Michael Bevan's information that he passed on to me about being very selective about the shots that you can and can't play and stick to those. And I've found it to be more successful and I've got out less stumped as the years have gone on.
And caught more fish.
And I've caught more fish and I've learned about different depths. Mackerel, you've got to go get right down onto the seabed.
Oh, God.
But if you're looking for a bit of sea bream, I tell you, you just want to elevate it a little bit. They tend to hover just slightly off of the sea bed there.
Oh, fantastic what you learn on this show.
Good tips, Berners. Right, there we go, Akash. Hopefully that's given you not only the techniques, but also the context. And increasingly in this show, we're finding out that context is the key to many, many things. And there's another example for you. Time now for our traditional point in the show where we have 60 seconds of uninterrupted talking from one of the members of the team. This week, coming on the soapbox, it's Mark Garraway. Garras, over to you.
Well, I'm going to come out with one here. 7-2 field, 7-2 offside field should be banned. I think they're the most disgraceful things that just make no sense whatsoever, particularly in lower levels of a game where nobody can catch it slip. You know, if you've got somebody like Malcolm Marshall bowling, then possibly you could bowl to a 7-2 with five slips. But I watch this, and I'm watching a game of cricket here where my team consistently go to 7-2s and end up bowling 4.5 feet outside off stump and wonder why they get smashed all over the place. And of course, every time they then try and compensate, they go into leg stump. And a bloke's only got to get a bat on it to get four, and it absolutely winds me up like nobody's business. So if anybody's got any ideas of when 7-2 fields are good, and if they can tell me how 7-2 fields are good, I'm up for a really good argument about this one. So fill your boots, send in your emails and your texts, and tell me how you use 7.2 better than I do.
Well, there we go. We're right into the MCC. It's been a long time since a fielding restriction has made it into the laws. So perhaps that could be another one.
Ban it.
Okay, that is just about all we've got time for on this week's show. There's a couple of things we need to sort out before we leave. So before we do that, let's talk about the winner of this week's competition. The questions were short this week. Bonga wanted to know about the 10,000 hour rule and fitness. And Akash wanted to know about learning the inside out shot over the covers. So Gareth, which one do you want to win the online coaching course prize this week?
This one's definitely an Akash. It's an Akash week. This one, it's inside out over extra cover.
Lovely.
I enjoyed the way we went about it. Started with the whys and then went to the hows. So absolutely Akash, 100% nailed on.
Nice one, Akash. And I think there's a course which covers that shot. So go and take a look in Ian Pont's section and see if you can find the one I'm talking about. Now, Berners, if someone was listening to the show and they were thinking, yep, I want to get on the free course action and I also want to get my question answered, how could they get in touch with us?
They can give us a call at 020-323-97543, or they can give us an email and the address is coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. You can get us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook if you go to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can subscribe to the show and you can listen to it every week without having to check back. It automatically downloads onto whatever device that you want. iTunes is the most popular way that people listen to the show, and that's easy. You just go into iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. Click the subscribe button. If you're using something else, the one that I'm using at the moment is called Pocket Cast. That's the Android that I use, and that, if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there, you'll find it, and that's what most podcatching programs allow you to do now. But if you want to go old school and use the RSS feed, then go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find the details for the RSS feed to subscribe in any other way that you like. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Labours. Cheers, Berners. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, boys.
Guys.
Cheers.